I'm on a city street in Virginia, standing in an empty parking space where just last night, Bob's car was stolen. Did you see Bob's car get stolen? Probably not. But do you know who's been stealing cars in Virginia? You could get a reward of up to $25,000. Submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. The HEAT program from the Virginia State Police. Reported. Rewarded.
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and Upsnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone, optimization, and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Madeira back on the Dr. Madeira Show. Thanks for listening. Today, we have an awesome guest and friend, Dr. Rika. How's it going today, Dr. Rika?
Great, Dr. Madeira. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Yeah, I'm excited. For those of you that don't know Dr. Rika, she has been leading whole families to optimal health for 22 years as a board-certified family doctor who's now certified in functional medicine. And she has a special interest in nutrigenetics, and methylation. So that's what we're going to be discussing today in regards to men's hormone health and metabolics. It's awesome to have you on the show. And maybe we can start off with what is the importance or what are the main key things why people should be aware of epigenetics and nutrigenetics for men's health and men's hormone health specifically?
Yeah, that is a great question. So let's just, I know your audience is pretty savvy, but the epigenetics obviously is the diet and lifestyle. And currently to date, there's an indication that if you live a great life and are eating healthy, that you can actually turn off mutated genes. And that was proven in the Agouti mouse experiment where they fed a mouse that was predisposed to being obese, a nutrient-rich diet with methylated B vitamins, and it did not become obese. So we can modulate what we're predetermined to be. Now, that's the current way of thinking. My worry, though, is that we are living in a stressed-out society, and unless you're constantly checking in, and as you and I both know, you can get in and out of balance, and most of us are kind of in and out of balance at any given time, is that the epigenetics may not be enough. So I love to look at then the genetics. So with the genetics, we have the actual gene, and we call it the genotype. And then if it's expressing, that is, and the mutation is actually expressing, we call it the phenotype. So what actually looks to the outside world. You have to look at everything. So I say this lightly. You have to look at someone's clinical symptoms, what you see on exam, what you see on lab, combined with the genetics. And you always start with the epigenetics. And to be honest, I've done this long enough that I can usually reverse engineer it, meaning that once we look at the picture, I can usually guess where the mutation are likely hiding and support someone that way. So we always start foundationally for these men that come through the doors. And, you know, testosterone, unfortunately, as you know, falls in our 30s. Right? So then they may come in with depression. So if someone I'm seeing tomorrow, his main complaint is depression. And well, I'm going to use some of his labs that came back to talk about the genetics that I likely see because I don't have his genetics at the current moment. And, you know, erectile dysfunction, low libido, weight gain, breast enlargement. So he had a hint of breast buds. I'd seen him 3 months ago, no breast buds. And now he's put on a little weight and he's got breast buds. And there's lots that can go with that, as well as the memory and concentration. So some of the same things we see in women are present in men. So you have to look at the whole big picture. So that's, you ask the question of what's the importance of the epigenetics and genetics. It's like, you really need to know the whole big picture, because to prescribe hormones is malpractice without looking at the big picture. You have to know what's going on. You can't just, I'll have patients come in, but I just want to see you for hormones. Unfortunately, there's so much more to it than hormones. And oftentimes you can balance them without even replacing them.
Well said. Yeah. I mean, not looking at the whole picture when it comes to hormones. I often get prospective patients or inquiries in my clinic, Apollo Health Clinic in Seattle, where people are just wanting hormones and now peptides without looking at the big picture. I really love that malpractice and really a disservice within that malpractice to the patient where, you know, if you're just kind of rubbing hormone creams on or doing testosterone injections and not dealing with the whole patient, the whole genetics and epigenetics, then, you know, it's like rubbing icing on a rotten cake. It's not going to really taste very good. No one's going to really like that. So, getting into maybe more granular details here with the pathways and whatnot, maybe we can start with testosterone synthesis and, you know, kind of the bigger picture of how testosterone or our hormones as men get depleted genetically and kind of what the holes in the genetics can be here and what pathways that men should be paying attention to and asking their integrative, you know, health practitioner, naturopathic doctor, functional medicine practitioner about.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the big picture overview is that all of our hormones are made from cholesterol. So that's our starting point. And one of the things we have to pay attention to is that if the cholesterol is too low, you're actually not going to make your hormones very effectively. And so measuring fasting cholesterol is utmost importance. And there's actually a gene, and you'll be interested to know, that can make your cholesterol too low. And I actually have that gene. So it's the ApoE gene, which we typically associate with increased risk of Alzheimer's. So you can have 2, 3, or 4. And someone who has a 2-2, so one copy from mom, one from dad, that's ApoE2, and has two copies of the 2, you're unfortunately predisposed to low cholesterol. And there was a period of time that my cholesterol was actually below 150. So it's not now because I'm paying attention and I'm well-versed. So this is prior to going into functional medicine. So That's one of the things you want to see. And there are ways. So you can use things like, if someone really is predisposed besides diet, if they need a boost, they may need something like sonic cholesterol, but that's kind of getting deep in. I'd always start with diet first, but you want to check, is that level high enough? And then the big picture overview is that cholesterol then will channel down and it makes progesterone and pregnenolone. And the two of those go on over to make testosterone. And then the testosterone has three routes. So this is really important because the first thing is progesterone, pregnenolone go on to make testosterone. So that conversion is really important. We'll talk about the gene that governs that. And then testosterone has three routes, and we'll talk about each of these. So there'll be four areas that we talk about. It's either excreted naturally, so you utilize it, and then you package it up to pee it out, and various enzymes handle that. It can be converted over to DHT. So we call that our testosterone on testosterone, our really androgenetic hormone that gives us, think of the men, unfortunately also causes baldness. Think of the men that you know in the media today that are bald and really buff. So The Rock, you know, he's the epitome. Mm-hmm. He's giant. He's really buff. He's bald. So he likely has a fast conversion of testosterone to DHT.
Yeah.
And there's risks associated. So we're going to back up and do all four of these in a minute. And then the last thing, the testosterone can be converted to estrogen. So let's just recap. So from cholesterol, we get progesterone, pregnenolone. The two of those go on to make your androgens. So for the intensive purposes of this talk, we'll just call it testosterone. There is more than just testosterone. And then testosterone has three routes it can go. You need to excrete it. That's the first route. Pee it out. You can convert it to DHT. Mm-hmm. Or you can convert it to estrogen or estradiol. So let's talk about that first conversion that goes from progesterone to pregnenolone. So that requires a gene called CYP. And CYP stands for cytochrome P450. So these are enzymes in our body that metabolize things like hormones. Again, that's a very simplified approach. It's CYP17A1. And so if that conversion is fast, then you're going to see a higher level of testosterone in the body. So this gentleman I'm seeing tomorrow, I saw high progesterone, but a suboptimal. He wasn't low, but he was suboptimal testosterone. So in my opinion, he likely has a slower conversion. So it's all lingering back there with the progesterone. And so you can bypass it, that you can give DHEA, but we're going to talk about natural. With him, I'm going to first visit natural ways to increase that. So you have to be cognizant. So if I just, and then you got to know which way is it going. And so for this particular gentleman, he had low estrogen, but he had man boobs. So what do you think's going on there? So the gene that governs that conversion is the word for it. It's called aromatase. But the gene that governs it is CYP19A1. And so if that conversion is quick, they're going to have higher levels of estradiol. And we'll talk about some of the epigenetics that cause that. So he had low estradiol. So I'm thinking his aromatase is inhibited. And it could be a gene mutation or it could be his diet and lifestyle. So first thing is that we always focus on diet and lifestyle. So the things that will slow that conversion are things like flaxseed. But I always say be careful because flaxseed is high in ALA, alpha-linolenic acid, which is very inflammatory. And inflammation can also lower your testosterone. So you got to be careful. You know, flavonoids, green tea, chrysin, controlling your weight, regulating your blood sugar. That's what's going to slow that conversion down. I don't think he has any of that going down because I think he's in an unhealthy time period. So his is problematic. The things that will speed that conversion up are things like alcohol. So people are drinking a lot. They're going to speed that up. Being zinc deficient will speed that up. Having that around the middle weight gain, which predisposes you to high insulin, and just being inflamed in general. So I can already tell you that his conversion from progesterone to testosterone is slow because he's got high progesterone. His conversion from testosterone to estrogen is slow too. So we got to look at ways of how do we naturally increase his testosterone. So we're going to talk about, you know, we don't want, you know, it's probably a good thing that some of that testosterone to estradiol is slowed because it's not giving him the hint of gynecomastia or man boobs that I've noticed when he came in for his labs. And so what we look at it for him, I'd be considering what are the external forces that are increasing estrogen that I didn't measure. And so that would be our xenoestrogens. So those are chemical compounds in the body that act like estrogen. And believe it or not, you know, it's any of the men's personal care products, and including phthalates, which is in heavily perfumed items, or parabens, which is in other personal care products. You can even find it in deodorant. So I will have my men. So there's a gentleman who came in fatigued, and he was at one of those centers, and they were treating his testosterone alone, and I was maximizing everything. And he got mostly better. He still had this residual fatigue, and we ran a list of what he was on. He was using Lever 2000, which is like the worst. It was ranked really toxic. I refer my patients to thinkdirtyapp.com, and I say you have to take an inventory. What are you putting on your skin? Yep. You want to make sure anything you're utilizing in the home to clean your home with isn't creating these, you know, faux estrogens in the body or xenoestrogens in the body. So we've talked about progesterone to testosterone or pregnenolone to testosterone being governed by CYP17A1. And then we've said one of the pathways is testosterone to estradiol, and that's governed by CYP19A1 and some of the things that can slow it or speed it up. So obviously living healthier. And one thing we didn't mention was stress. Stress will speed that up. So Here, let me paint you the picture. You have a stereotypical man. He's getting a little more fatigued. He might be entrepreneur, high level executive, burning the candle on both ends. He's always stress, never a break from that stress. That stress is affecting sleep, not affecting sleep. And then he's converting everything into estrogen. So his libido goes into the gutter. So potentially a lot of these people that are busy, then if you're busy at work, sometimes other areas of your life suffer, and then you worry about the relationship. So then he's not interested in being intimate with his partner because his, you know, testosterone's in the gutter and he's so stressed out and just not focused. So we have to modulate that level of stress. What do you like to use, Dr. Madeira? And I'll tell you some of my favorites for natural.
For stress, well, first of all, working on sleep, exercise, and meditation, but sometimes people need support to even get to sleep and to calm down enough to sit to meditate for 3 to 10 minutes a day. So I really like the herb skullcap, which is Scutellaria latiflora, which is in a lot of herbal formulas, but you can just get it as an herbal alcohol extract tincture is what we call it. And Gaia Herbs has a great one. Medi Herb has a great one. And then the other things that you can take it during the day and then higher dose it before bed for sleep. and it's really helpful. It's also in the formulation tablet, herbal tablet formula by MediHerb called Ashwagandha Complex. So ashwagandha is great as a nervine, which is great for calming the nervous system and not over sedating. So you can take ashwagandha, you know, morning, noon, evening, these tablets. You probably don't want to take it too late in the afternoon because it does have licorice root in it, just a little bit. So I like those two just to start out. And then, you know, like you're saying, look at these genetic labs, look at, you know, get an organic acids test, get a Dutch test. And then the gold standard for men's hormones is looking at serum blood hormones. So it's, you know, comprehensive, and most men and most patients in general aren't used to that deep of a workup, but that's what we do. We go deep dive and figure out what's really going on with people. With this genetic testing, we're talking about this saliva, correct? That they're gonna test?
Yeah, this one's a saliva test. So at the moment, I really am enjoying the DNA company just because they have actionable items and they do have a specific portion for female and male hormones, which is huge. So I've combined it with 23andMe. 23andMe mm-hmm. doesn't report something called copy number variants. So okay. that in some genes you can have zero copy, one copy, or two copies. And we'll talk about that in a moment. So you can have that when you're actually excreting the testosterone. You can have a copy number. We'll talk about that. And so that could, it usually is typically just not reported. So you don't know, is it missing or is it not there? And so sometimes I'll combine the reports, but yeah, definitely right now the DNA company, and they're out of McGill University in Canada. And I've just, I've utilized a lot of companies over the last 6 to 7 years, and right now settled on them. And it's great because I'm giving them feedback. There are a couple genetic mutations that don't pertain to hormones that are more prevalent, and I want to see them add in just a couple. And so mm-hmm. they're really open, and that's what you want to see in a company, is say, hey, these are actionable, I want you to add them. And they would say, hey, we would definitely consider that. So of course they don't want to be run into what other companies are doing, running all these genetics that no one can action on, and that doesn't do any of us any good, right? Yeah, but getting back to that stress piece, you brought up such a great point, is that we could tell someone to meditate, but if they're so stressed out and not sleeping that they can't even get there. So you need to calm the whole.
I'm on a city street in Virginia, standing in an empty parking space where just last night, Bob's car was stolen. Did you see Bob's car get stolen? Probably not. But do you know who's been stealing cars in Virginia? You could get a reward of up to $25,000. Submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com. or call 1-800-947-HEAT. The HEAT program from the Virginia State Police. Reported. Rewarded.
I'm here in my living room, peering through my mini blinds at a man who's sawing off something under my neighbor's car. Yep, this guy is stealing catalytic converters. And if you report thieves like him, you could get a reward up to $25,000. Just submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. That's H-E-A-T. The Virginia State Police HEAT Program. Reported. Rewarded.
Pull system down and then maybe ask them to meditate. And so one thing I like for the type A's, and that's myself included, I want to see a tangible result. So I teach everyone a form of biofeedback that was put out by HeartMath. And so it measures heart rate variability. I teach it within 2 minutes in the office. I teach it within 2 minutes. I give them a 2-minute session and everyone goes out with a sensor. And here's why I do it. Over the years, I have the common things you and I probably both hear are, but doc, I'm not stressed out, which is always proven wrong if we run their cortisol and it's either super high or super low and it's tanked in the gutter. And the second thing is I've had patients come in and say, I've meditated for 30 years and you put them on HeartMath, and HeartMath will assess when you get into coherence, whether someone can trigger a calm nervous system or parasympathetic response, and they can't get into that parasympathetic state no matter what. And there are other things that will hinder that and kind of beyond the scope of this, but they're so stressed they can't. But as you work with them, they'll be able to get it. But it's a tangible result, so they can visibly see. And you start them at the lowest level, so then everyone, you know, hits success, and then you gradually move it up. And as little as 10 minutes a day over 6 to 9 weeks improved depression just under 50%. Mm-hmm. You know, fatigue and sleep and all of that. So I use it in combination. And most of my patients really, really enjoy it. Occasionally, as I said, if they're not able to unwind and de-stress, then we help them out. We jump into their boat and help them paddle upstream to turn that boat around. And that can be adaptogenic herbs, just like you said, the ashwagandha or whatever. So we don't let someone suffer in silence. We say, all right, but the long-term goal is to be able to get you to do this on your own. So,
right.
Yeah, long-winded. So we've gone through now one of the routes testosterone is excreted and got into a talk on stress. And why don't we go into that, the way we excrete it? So there are two sets of genes. So there's one called CYP3A4, which is a slightly minor excretion route, and then the UGT genes. And so that's glucuronidation. So it's just one of the phase two pathways of being able to break down when our testosterone is broken down to an active metabolite, being able to package and excrete it out the body. And that's the UGT gene can have copy number variants. So some guys can potentially have zero copies of the gene, and then it will affect whether they excrete it. So hugely important to know. And why this is important is you want to know which way the hormones are going to go if you give them. So say we've already exhausted epigenetics, we've used natural means and natural support systems to address everything, and someone is still low and really would benefit, then you want to know which way it's going to go so you can address that. And I oftentimes wonder, I'm like, boy, it'd be really nice to know everyone's genetics if you're going to do any hormones at all, because you can get into trouble. Yeah. The alternative route, as you know, is you can just look at blood markers and, you know, hope for the best. And if you're not seeing the conversion like you want, then maybe go back in. Any questions about that one? So we talked about a conversion to estradiol and then excreting it, peeing it out before we jump into converting it to DHT.
Yeah, I love this. I mean, this is fascinating. I know that in Seattle, there's lots of software engineers and people aren't software engineers, lots of kind of analytical types that like to see research and data and, you know, science and biochemical pathways. So we're talking about biochemistry based on genetics, maybe zooming out for people that might not be privy or doctrinated into genetics or epigenetics, that where are we in the body? Are we in the liver, purely in the liver, where we're talking about phase one? And, you know, I'm aware as a physician, obviously, that phase one detox is in the liver and phase two. But with the other pathways, we're talking about, you know, synthesizing testosterone in the testes with pregnenolone all the way through to testosterone. And then some of these pathways being in the liver with phase one and phase two detox. Is this also happening in the periphery at all, where any of these pathways able to happen in the blood itself, or everything have to pass through the liver, through the bloodstream, with testosterone being synthesized in the testes, traveling throughout our bodies as men, and obviously women have some testosterone too, and then getting to the liver and traveling through and getting converted and excreted, as you're talking about. So back to my quick question, is this mostly in the liver that we're talking about right now with phase one, phase two, and then?
So it's that conversion that we're going to, obviously, the UGT kind of enzymes the liver, and then, you know, only 10% is converted to DHT. So, and then you're right. So it's made in the testes, and then you're going to get a small amount by the adrenal glands in the both of us, both men and women. And so that's a good question. I'm like, I don't want to be stumped here, but yeah. So the conversion of the, so the excretion happens in the liver. Obviously majority of production in men is in the testes, a little lesser extent in the adrenal glands. Unfortunately you can get estrogen production in our fat cells. The more fat you have, the more estrogen will be converted. So some of it's in the periphery as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the, I think that a lot of men and, well, I think a lot of people just don't know that as we get more stressed out, we have higher cortisol from the adrenal glands, more adrenaline, norepinephrine, epinephrine, and then that's dealing with potentiating, you know, adipocytes, fat cells growing and replicating around the midsection. And then that fat tissue is a reservoir for aromatase. And then it's also, like you're saying, genetics. So, you know, you could have two people, same height and weight, same BMI, same body fat percentage or similar. And one person could have more aromatase genetically is what we're getting at, right?
Yeah. One person can have more.
So that other person could have higher risk of higher estrogen, which when we get free testosterone and even total testosterone to estrogen imbalance in men, as you were talking about, you get low libido, potentially moodiness, potentially gynecomastia, which is genetic, and other issues like enlarged prostate. And then, as we know now, prostate cancer, if it just keeps going down the downstream. So for guys listening, you know, why the heck do we care about this? Well, we care because we're trying to prevent things like a marriage ending because you have no libido and it's been 2 to 13 years since you and your wife have had sex. And now, you know, you've been in marriage counseling or not, and things are not working out. So that's the why here. It does get pretty detailed. But let's get back into it. So we're talking about excretion. We're talking about aromatase and then the UDP genes. We can just start off where we left off there.
Yeah. So then the third route is really, and kind of what I'm fascinated about. So you can say, you know, when you see these big buff guys, it's like when you take testosterone and convert it to DHT, that's how we get nice striated muscle. And so and that gene that governs it is called SRD5A2. And so some of these names, leave it to us. I'm just passionate about it. I geek out on this stuff. And so if that enzyme works very quickly, you're going to have a quicker conversion to DHT. So if you're homozygous, that means that both copies are upregulated and you're really converting that quickly, you're going to have the stereotypical picture will be a bald male or female sometimes that is extremely striated and doesn't take much to get them very buff looking when they exercise. So if you've ever heard people say, but doc, I bulk up when I work out as opposed to like leaning out, well, it's likely that they're either converting it modestly fast or very fast. And so thankfully as a woman, I have just one upregulated copy. If I had two, I might be bald, which would not be very desirable. And so when I work out, I do feel like I can bulk up. And so very quickly. And so, and you know, for some, you know, back in the day when you're a younger adolescent, we didn't want to be big and bulky. We wanted to be lean, right? Not big and bulky. And so the worry then is if you've got a male who's converting it very quickly, like you had alluded to, is that that higher DHT is associated with prostate enlargement, prostate cancer. And so then you say, well, what can we do? So, you know, naturally salt palmetto is one of the ones that'll decrease that conversion. And then in one study, they noted that if you combine it with astaxanthin, the two together actually did a nice job in slowing that conversion. And so that might be an option for someone even before, if you know their genetics, even before they're having issues, you may want to aid them in slowing it. And so that's kind of like the big picture overview of those main genes. So kind of like a recap is cholesterol, make sure it's not too low. It goes on to make progesterone and pregnenolone. Both of those go on to make your androgens. In this case, we're just using testosterone to simplify things by the CYP17A1 gene. If you convert it really fast for men, good for you. If it's slow, maybe not as desirable because you may have lower, if that conversion's lower libido. But and then it also depends on what do you do with that testosterone. And the first thing is to excrete it out when your body's done using it. Two genes that govern that, CYP3A4, and then the UGT enzymes, so those two. Or you can go on to convert it to estradiol, which is our aromatase, enzyme or the gene that governs that is CYP19A1. And again, we talked about things in our lifestyle that can slow that conversion down or increase it. So the bad things we do in our life, like drinking a lot, putting on, weight around the middle, high cholesterol, high blood sugars, and just being inflamed in general from not enough sleep, too much stress, will make that conversion go quicker and lower testosterone. And then the last one is the conversion to DHT. And so that's where you want just enough going over with not too much, because if you're getting too much, then the long-term risk is large prostate and maybe even prostate cancer.
Right.
So that's kind of the overview of the genes. But let's talk about, like, say we're going to paint a hypothetical. So say one of your patients comes in and says, "Doc, I have to have testosterone. Like, all my friends in the gym are on it, and I'm convinced it's low." And indeed, you check and it's low. And say for whatever reason, you go against your better judgment, which I know you won't and I won't, and you put them on testosterone and you don't have the genetics. And say that person fastly converts to testosterone and fastly converts to estradiol. And then next thing you know, you see them 6 weeks later and they're even more fatigued because all they're doing with the testosterone you just have given them is converted to estrogen. And now they got man boobs, so they really don't like you. So you have to be really mindful of that, is that you have to know which way down the pathway it's going to go. So I don't know if you've ever seen that, but that's one of the common things. And in fact, the gentleman I was treating that was using that Lever 2000 soap was at a clinic, and his estradiol levels were sky high. And so they were giving him aromatase inhibitors to lower it. But I'm like, this is where you really need to treat the whole person. You just can't give someone hormones without knowing all the downsides.
What was their serum estradiol level? Do you recall?
I'm way high.
Yeah. And then aromatase inhibitors in the kind of testosterone optimization community are really controversial, if not kind of taboo right now, because what's happening is these low T clinics around the country and potentially, I could say, around the world are overusing aromatase inhibitors and just driving men's estradiol and estrogen levels, specifically estradiol, estrone, into the toilets. And then what happens is if you get estradiol in the blood below, and this is very important, so everyone listen up, below 10 picograms per deciliter in your serum blood, which you can measure, ultra-sensitive estradiol at any lab like Quest Diagnostics or LabCorp in the U.S., is that you have a risk for like hip fracture and bone mineral density issues. So we like to see estradiol, serum estradiol measured with your testosterone above 20. And if anyone's on aromatase inhibitor and your doctor doesn't know this and you're not checking your estradiol regularly, at least every 3 to 4 months minimum in the first year of treatment. And then in the second year, if things are going well, maybe 4 to 6 months. But I like to keep a pretty short leash, especially the first, 18 months of treatment because of this. So, low dose aromatase inhibitors, off-label use from compounding pharmacies. I've been using those on and off with men for, a while, basically since I've been doing this. And so my colleagues, and it's a huge debate, but if you're checking things and things are good, I've also seen men who do horribly with anastrozole, the main aromatase inhibitor used as a compounding capsule. Usually a starting dose is about 0.5 milligrams once a week, where, just once a week of 0.5 milligrams has completely killed men's libido. So we do need testosterone and estrogen to have an adequate libido as men, which before it was kind of like, back in like 2012, 2013, the conversation was, let's just drive down the estrogen levels and keep testosterone high and optimized. So there's been anecdotal case studies where 40 something year old males walking in the airport, falls, fractures their hip, completely buff, working out, looking really healthy, but the AIs, the aromatase inhibitors, or they're overdosing on them. So just need to kind of share that public service announcement with everybody. But yeah, going back to genetics, starting from the top, cholesterol. So a lot of men are taking statin medications, your Lipitor, your simvastatin, your, you know, all those different statin medications, driving total cholesterol down and LDL and all that for your, you know, conventional medical doctor, nurse practitioner, primary care doctor, or maybe even cardiologist if you have heart issues. But the risk there is serious because statin medications are going to lower your cholesterol, vitamin D, and then cause issues with mitochondria in your body and your heart. So they're, you know, I guess we are saying mitochondrial toxic, right? So that's a problem. That's why you have CoQ10 that you need to take with statin medications. But and one pharmaceutical company was looking at trying to get their statin medication to already have CoQ10 in it. So they know, they're not stupid. They have smart scientists and pharmacists and researchers working for them, obviously, but it's a known thing to take CoQ10 with statins, but even...
I'm on a city street in Virginia, standing in an empty parking space where just last night, Bob's car was stolen. Did you see Bob's car get stolen? Probably not. But do you know who's been stealing cars in Virginia? You could get a reward of up to $25,000. Submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. The HEAT program from the Virginia State Police. Reported. Rewarded.
Michael J. for Hope for the Warriors. Started back in 06 at Camp Lejeune, military families witnessing the effects of war on their loved ones. Now, almost 20 years later, they've aided over 53,000 service members, veterans, and families with confidential, high-quality behavioral health care services at little or no cost to post-9/11 vets and their families. Over 91% of every dollar donated goes directly to the programs. If you're as concerned about our heroes as I am, go to hopeforthewarriors.org.
Then it's going to drive your cholesterol down. And we've seen research with when LDL gets below a certain number, I believe it's 50 or 60, which is where, you know, they like to get LDL, total LDL down for men who have had a cardiac event, especially. But cardiologists like to see it that low. We've seen more propensity towards cancer. So you don't want to drive cholesterol down for more reasons, just optimizing your testosterone. The other question I had for you was, where do we want total cholesterol to be? Obviously, this has been a big debate. And about 20, 30 years ago, the cardiologist board or group of practitioners that make these decisions of where the target lab test value should be for total cholesterol. I believe it was 220 in the past was okay. And now it's around, we want it at, they're saying 200 in the labs for total cholesterol. So there's been some debate in the men's health circles saying that it's okay to have a total cholesterol of, you know, 285 or 300 even. And then other people obviously on the statin camp are saying, let's drive total cholesterol down as far as we can. So what are your thoughts on that? Where do we want, what's your optimal range for total cholesterol?
So pre-the age of 65, I'd like them 175 to 200, kind of in, it's a sweet spot. 150 is a minimum, but that's still low. And then when they did the studies for brain health, so for the elderly, the results between about 2 to 240 bodes well with cognitive function. So then we have to worry about that because, you know, mm-hmm. 1 in 2 people are going to be demented by the age of 80. You know, it's pretty high. So you have to be really mindful of that. So forget about the libido and testosterone for a moment, but when you're going down the road. So you shouldn't. 200, and then this is another area I know if you're okay with it, I'll talk about it, is that I won't look at just the overall numbers. I'm going to look at the more advanced panels, which I know we just had a brief discussion about this that you look at as well. And so I want to know, what is that LDL particle count? And, you know, I want to try to keep that under 1,000. And so there are natural ways to lower that, you know, fish oil in high doses, unless you have some kind of bleeding disorder. So you're talking 4 to 6 grams is going to lower that nicely, along with all the dietary modification. Unfortunately, as we come out of, you know, traditional medical training, they tell you to tell your patients to be on a low cholesterol diet that's low fat, which is the opposite. That's what I was telling people in the 90s. So I'm glad I've, you know, I admit to it, and I'm glad I've become wiser. And we all know now that the carbs, the unutilized, the carbohydrates, you got to really focus on eating lower glycemic foods. A lot of these people are eating too high of carbs for their body. And I can't tell you what is right for you, because that's also, unfortunately, genetically determined. And that gene is Amy. Blame it on Amy, right? So that's the gene. And unfortunately, I knew lifelong that I don't need as many carbs. And I have a homozygous mutation in that gene, so I don't need as many carbs. And ironically, when I was looking at pure weight loss, I don't need as much saturated fats. And so if I'm eating a whole avocado, yeah, it's healthy, but it's doing nothing if I'm looking at weight losses and leaning out as my ultimate goal. But I digress. So LDL particle count, and then I will want to look at the following. When I'm looking at these numbers, I want to know, is someone making plaque? And so that's LPA-PLA2. So LPA-PLA2. So maybe they're making plaque, then you want to know how much of the LDL is damaged. So the LDL actually has to be damaged to deposit on the arteries. And we call that oxidized LDL. And then the last two numbers I really, really look at is MPO, myeloperoxidase. So capital M, capital P, and capital O. And that number tells me, are they at risk for rupturing that plaque? And then lipoprotein A, little a. And again, a lot of times, so mice actually don't get heart disease because they don't produce lipoprotein A. And we produced it as a way around to counteract way back in the day scurvy, so vitamin C deficiency. So we know one of the things I'll use is high dose vitamin C to normalize those values. So if someone's at risk, so I look at what is their risk of having a heart event, a cardiac event. What's the total number? And I say, that's not as important as all these individual numbers. The particle count, which, you know, under 1,000 we're shooting for, is that bad cholesterol, the LDL, is it damaged to begin with? And if so, why is it damaged? So we're looking at anything causing oxidative stress is going to damage it. And by that fancy term, it's when you cut an apple open and it turns brown, that's oxidative stress. That could be all the epigenetics. So just to review, it's pollutants in the environment. It's the chemicals we put on our bodies. It's the lack of sleep. It's the prolonged exposure to stress and not being taught how to modulate your own stress response. And the list goes on and on and on. And so, and then we look at are they damaged LDL? Are they making plaque and are they at risk for rupture? So it's not one simple answer. Someone would have to have a pretty abnormal profile with a high risk of having a heart attack or stroke for me to reach to a statin, which is almost never. You know, they would really have that. And so I had an executive woman who came in to me at the age of 68. She's 72 now, and she's still going strong. And she would tank. She would take on these big contracts. She'd be fine, but doc, I don't feel stressed, the stereotypical. And then her body would manifest it as fatigue because her cortisol was out of whack, and then it would plummet. And we'd recover her. And it took me 18 months of working with her for her to realize I need to do something about this. I need to change the contracts I'm taking. I need to learn how to modulate my stress. And she had a heart attack 10 years prior. And to seeing me, and then she's been doctoring with me for 4 years. So that's 14 years, no events. And her total number is a lot high. It's like 250, 275. Right. So we've worked.
Total cholesterol.
Yeah. But remember, I needed at least 240 for cognition, and her cognition is sharp. And we've proven time and time again, she's getting the clean bill of health from a cardiologist when he does his routine stress test. Yeah. So you can't, but that's, I'd say, don't take it with a grain of salt. And this should not constitute medical advice, is that you got to look at every picture. For her, we knew that wasn't her biggest issue. So she had other underlying stuff that we were working on. But yeah, I would do all the natural approaches too to lower it before. And then, you know, Mark Houston, who wrote the book, What Your Doctor Didn't Tell You or Won't Tell You About Heart Disease, he talks about pulse dosing in real small amounts of statins 3 times a week. Genetically, you want to know whether you are predisposed to having that mitochondrial dysfunction with the statin before you even think of reaching for one, number one. And number two, if you did reach for one, you would definitely want to supplement with a minimal of CoQ10. And so there's a young woman out there, you may or may not have heard of her. She was initially, her moniker was the Gene Queen, Sarah Morgan. She's gone on to create two supplemental products. One is called The Other Pill, and it replaces all the nutrient deficiencies from the oral contraceptive pill. And now she has a complementary pill for the statins. It's already out. And so that's, I'll have to maybe send you a link so you can share with your viewers. I don't have.
That'd be great.
Yeah. And so she's already created that. So forget about the pharmaceutical companies helping us out. She's already kind of beaten them to the punch and saying, if you really must need to be on one. So it's so individualized, but I'd gather to say that you're going to have a smaller percentage of people that really, really need to be on a statin. And so my mom came to stay with us. Poor woman's, you know, 81 years old, and I get her blood work, and you know, she's got systolic and diastolic dysfunction and now high cholesterol. And here's the irony. She tells me, oh, doc sent me to physical therapy. I said, really, why did he send you therapy? He said, my legs are really weak. I can almost not get to a stand. He proceeds to increase her statin. Therapy did help her balance. And when I looked at her labs, I almost fell over and I grabbed the bottle. I said, you are not allowed. You're not going to die of a heart attack. I know your risk. This is not your major risk. And so I won't let her take it. She was down to 125. So not only is but yet he's sending her therapy to strengthen her legs. And it's like, well, the statin's causing the myopathy, the weakness in her legs. And it's going to, pretty soon, it's going to shoot. The only thing this poor woman has remaining is her cognition, which is, she's sharp as a tack. I'm surprised she is. And so, yeah, we're going to, I'll report back. So she definitely, we haven't seen very much weakness. And if anything, I'll have to be grateful that the physical therapy did help with balance. A lot of elderly have problems with balance, but yeah, that's the worst thing I've seen happen. And I'll definitely send a note back to her doc and say, I'm sorry. He's about ready to retire. I think we need to find her someone else anyway.
Yeah. He's not up to date on all this latest information about genetics with statins. So that genetic test for statins, are we talking about what specific genetic tests people should look at getting? Is it a blood test or saliva test?
It is the blood test. Oh no, I'm sorry. It's a saliva test that the DNA company runs. And you've asked me too quick. It's SLC, and I'll have to, you've asked me too quick. So.
Is it the SLOCO, or I think it might be SLOCO, is one of the statin genetic tests.
Yeah, it is. And I'm like, oh my goodness. It's a SLOCO test.
So many.
I know, you have to remember. So it goes to show you. The other thing I'm a big fan of is just in time information and not remembering things that, here, I'm going to pull up for you. So not remembering things that you don't really, okay, SLOCO 1B1. All right. So I've redeemed myself, but we're on to it. The other one, you know, I have to laugh, is I like that one that governs vitamin A. So you talk about these teens with acne and, you know, a lot of them aren't eating well. And, you know, vitamin A is governed by the BCMO. I always think of the Italians, BCMO, like kiss me. Like, and so I always try to think of weird ways to remember these little terms because there are so many different letters that go behind all of these genes. But yeah, that is one that I'll look at. And so I'm doing a full genetics review this afternoon for a patient who, thankfully she's picked it up early. Here's the other thing is, so you guys who are out there feeling a little fatigue, well, forget about just your testosterone. Fatigue is a precursor to everything else that follows. I mean, that's what happened to me. Fatigue usually is a combination of diet, lifestyle, mild nutrient deficiencies. And then when you get enough nutrient depletions and enough toxic exposure, it takes out your mitochondria. And then you worry about all the bad things that come with it. And when you have too much oxidative stress, so then you start seeing premature signs of aging. So I've had people come, one woman came to me with brain fog, starting in her 40s, she's early 40s, osteoporosis already, cataracts already, and early menopause. She has four signs of early aging. And she decided and opted that it was too expensive to work with me. And I'm like, well, the alternative is someone's going to see you in 5 to 10 years when it's almost more difficult to reverse it. So the woman I'm going to see for a full genetics review, her mom died of both Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. So you better
know
there's a lot of toxic stuff. And so we're mainly addressing her mold. She does have a practitioner who's doing the rest. She doesn't, this practitioner doesn't do mold. And I said, I'll do the mold and the genetics. So we're kind of collaborating on the case. And it's just fascinating what you see. And she definitely has the gene that governs how you break down free radicals. And that gene is called SOD. And so that's the one, the ones I really pay close attention to. So superoxide dismutase. And I know we're getting off track for testosterone, but you know, this is what's going to get
important. It's important.
Get people in trouble. The guys are going to come in saying I'm fatigued. It may be so much more than just testosterone. And so our free radical production is necessary. We produce free radicals every time we create our energy, our ATP. It's a natural byproduct. Indeed, we need free radicals to kill any bacteria or viruses we're exposed to. But too much of it, if it's not neutralized out and you have a deficiency in the SOD gene, which takes superoxide, one of our main free radicals, and it neutralizes it initially to hydrogen peroxide. And then that can further be neutralized by one of two things, catalase or glutathione, and H2O and water, or H2O and O2, and then one is just H2O. If it doesn't do that, it'll combine with nitric oxide and form peroxynitrate. So that's like a real complex way to look at it, but peroxynitrate is damaging to our tissues. And that's so bad. Damaging to our tissues, and not only tissues, but you can measure this too. You can do oxidative stress panels. I'm sure you may do blood and urine, or you know, Genova is one of the companies that I use, and you can measure how high is their lipid peroxides, is their tissue damage, how high is their 8-hydroxydeoxyguanosine, which is 8-ODG, and that's damage to the DNA. So you better work when you see that. And then things I think about are, like I said, cognitive dysfunction. So people would have some memory lapses when they're early, you know, memory. Yeah. Loss of memory shouldn't be normal until you're 100. I don't even know. Even then, you know, right. 90 maybe. And then, or osteoarthritis. That's an oxidative stress process going on. Or definitely fatigue. There's mild levels of that. So
yeah, and this whole neurological deficits happening at younger and younger ages. And you talked about, I don't even know what to call it, but I guess premature ovarian failure or premature menopause. They're two different things, but kind of similar pathophysiology here. And that's what's happening in men, is this premature kind of andropause. And, you know, I've seen thousands of men, and I've seen men who are bodybuilders in their 20s. I've seen professional athletes. I've seen, you know, all these people in Seattle that work at tech companies, which is most people, and or their company works for tech companies, and that's what everybody's kind of up to here, or they're an entrepreneur, but everybody's burning the candle so hard at both ends in our culture, whether you live in the city or the country, it doesn't even matter anymore. We're on our devices too much, computers too much blue light, all these chemicals in the air, food, and water. So all of this stuff is very important. So how are you going to optimize every cell in your body? It's not just about, again, the point is not just about hormone replacement therapy, even if they are bioidenticals, that's great. However, if we don't know your genetics, it's going to be really hard to figure out what the optimal pathway is for you. And then, I mean, even just starting with like an APOE 2, 3, 4 test, seeing where you lie. And, you know, before, if you do have high cholesterol, checking out, you know, is a statin even indicated with the SLOCO gene? And then diving deeper into, okay, let's get the saliva. And what's the company that you're mentioning a lot in Canada?
The DNA company. Formerly they were utrients.com. So the DNAcompany.com.
So. Okay. So they're called the DNAcompany.com. I've done the test on myself, and I've also done 23andMe and then had it converted through like an online application. That was a long time ago that I did the whole 23andMe data conversion for myself and patients. But I would say the DNA company in Canada, in Montreal, right? So they're in Montreal. At McGill University. Yep. So they are spectacular for hormones for men and women. So if you're listening to this and you're looking to work with me or Dr. Rika, or you're in another state and you want to work with someone locally, you can talk to them about using the DNA company and getting that checked out. That should be first line. And, you know, in the first 3 months of working with your practitioner, you should be looking at these things, because maybe you don't need all the supplements that you did some supplement quiz online or that all your friends told you to take. So you could be saving money and then have a targeted natural approach, and then look at your medication list. If you are on medications, are these even indicated? Or are these toxic for you based on your genetics? And actually, the pharmaceutical companies are investing millions and millions of dollars, and probably even more over the next years, and already have, to create these genetic tests for medications to figure out what medications would be best for us. So, and that's where we get some of this nutrigenomic information in the research. And so it's not like some dude in some lab in the middle of nowhere is doing this all alone. This is where medicine is going across the board. So you want to get on the train before it's too late, before you get to age, you know, 65 and you have Alzheimer's or dementia. And some other things that people can look at to prevent dementia and Alzheimer's are avoiding certain medications. So there's been quite a bit of research that's come out to show that benzodiazepines can lead to this with long-term use. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the medications in any kind of amount because they are highly addictive. So, you know, maybe you start with the Xanax on every other flight or every flight you take, and next thing you know, you're taking it every night to calm down from work. So very hard for people to get off of. So I'm definitely sensitive and sympathetic to that. However, not good for our brains long term. You know, we didn't evolve eating benzodiazepines. So keep that in mind. And then sleep medications have been shown in animal studies to cause cancer. So, you know, obviously Ambien is not the solution. So if you're using Ambien, which I have used, so I'm not completely oblivious to the need to sleep. But if you're not sleeping, you're not going to be making testosterone. So that's my little side note. We're kind of getting off topic. But so going back to genetics, what are some other nutritional or supplemental things that people could look into or talk to their practitioners about as far as nutrition inputs when, if they have issues with converting testosterone to aromatase or over-excreting with in phase two? What are some things that they should avoid or definitely look into or ask their practitioners or ask us if you're wanting to work with one of us?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was just going to say, hey, we should probably touch about the epigenetics a little harder, right?
We've yeah.
Focused on the genetics, but dietary wise, you know, it's never one size fits all, but if you're, I would venture to guess, if you're having issues, then we need to explore what's the sugar intake? What is your blood sugar level, your overall blood sugar control for 3 months? What's your insulin level? And so you're like, most men that are struggling are likely going to need a lower sugar diet, and you definitely want to focus on whole foods. And so I don't care what percentage fat you eat, but they have found that a diet that's less than 40% fat, such as one study, did equate to lower testosterone production. So you need healthy fats. And ironically enough, macadamia nuts is a food that's lower in the PUFAs, so the polyunsaturated fatty acids. And you want them lower because the higher the polyunsaturated fatty acids can actually lower testosterone. So adding in nuts, and again, you're not going to do it every day because you want to have a rotational diet. And, you know, you want those flavonoids. The flavonoids are going to decrease the conversion to estrogen. So you want color in your food. You want servings. You know, we've gone so far away from, what about just adding things, adding color, adding servings? That's the first starting point. I know it sounds simple, but do an inventory. How many servings of vegetables do you eat in a day? And I'm not saying be all vegetarian, because we need protein to be able to detoxify. We need protein to make serotonin, so we're happy. We need protein to make dopamine, so we're focused. And so our kids today, unfortunately, are anxious and not focused because they're protein malnourished. But You know, so same for adults. So if you're reaching for all those carby snacks, it's not going to help. And then one, if you're optimizing diet, you definitely want to have, you know, the three nutrients I really like to optimize is vitamin D3, which you had mentioned, zinc, because zinc deficiency will increase that conversion of testosterone to estradiol. And again, what you don't want, and magnesium. So those are crucial. And then in general, from an inflammation standpoint, I'm looking blood work wise, you know, are they inflamed? So that's, we measure just high sensitivity C-reactive protein. I also will look at, from a dietary standpoint, how many omega 6s to 3s are they eating? So what's that ratio? And you want to get it as close to 1 to 1 omega 6s, think vegetable fats and processed foods, and omega 3s being, you know, largely it's going to be fish. And most people need to supplement. And so then you also look, one of the things I'll say for longevity is that omega 3 index, so how many total omega 3s do you have, being up over 8 bodes well for decrease in death or dying from any cause. So let me say that one more time. So an omega 3 index 8.0 or higher is going to lower your risk of dying from any cause. So, and usually that's not going to come with just fish intake. It's, you're going to need to supplement, usually a small degree. And then if their diet's okay, we've maximized nutrients. You can think of things like we're giving them good fats. So extra virgin olive oil, maybe some macadamia nuts a few times a week. Branched chain amino acids. I don't know if you're using that. And so I found them important. My husband was actually having difficulty recovering from exercise. We're both on it now, and it works like a charm. So it's fueling our muscles, and we've got great recovery now as
the
well.
The branched chain amino acids for exercise recovery?
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah.
Important. And then, yeah. And so obviously we want stress modification of some sort. You pick the flavor. I always tell people, just because I'm selling you heart math, if you hate it and you're not going to do it, you're not going to do it. It's just like exercise. When people say, what kind should I do? It should be something you enjoy. But unfortunately for testosterone, you do need a component of strength training and the HIIT, really the high intensity interval training. So those are the two that are going to be the most bang for the buck. So whether that's on your own at home, and for someone who doesn't exercise, for the HIIT, you know, I'll say start with a 7-minute workout app. That's your minimum per day I want you doing, because you can do it at home and it's 7 minutes and there's no excuses, right? And focus on, I always say to my patients, focus on the low-hanging fruit. If you think it's going to be really difficult to add the exercise, but it's easier to make the food modifications, do that first, you know. And everyone's got a different approach to how change is made in the body. Some people need to cold turkey everything. They do everything all at once, and I'm always fascinated by them, because I'm not one of them. So I gradually layer things in, and then it becomes a habit. And that's the way I function best. And so
I love it.
Kind of to sum it up, what else would you add to that? What did I miss here?
Yeah, I think you covered a lot of ground, and yeah, I agree with all that. And, you know, for some people, this might help, like eating a rainbow. Dr. Deanne Minich, she's a PhD nutritionist. She's done a lot of educational things in the functional medicine community and written a book or two. And she talks about the rainbow diet. So eating more colors. I think some men have in their boyhood were maybe traumatized by brown vegetables or overcooked vegetables or canned vegetables, depending on what your childhood was like. So you can actually have a salad faster than you can get fried food by driving to a fast food restaurant in your own kitchen. So this doesn't have to take an hour and a half or 3 hours of cooking in your kitchen. It can be pretty quick. The other things that I really liked you said about exercise, I think back to my childhood, where today a lot of guys, I'm, you know, coaching them and, you know, prescribing exercise per se. And it really shouldn't be a chore. You know, think about things that you like to do, maybe with your buddies or by yourself, whether it's hiking or going for like an interval training run in the woods or on a track. If you enjoy that, if you don't enjoy it, you know, yes, we do need to lift weights. We need to lift heavy things and we need to have some cardio, but we need to get away from this chronic cardio, an hour and a half or an hour plus every day, 7 days a week or 5 days a week or 4 hours on the weekend. You know, if you're going for a day hike, that's fine. But what I'm talking about is like people are doing like ultra running. And I don't really give a shit what you think, but ultra running is, you know, if that's your thing, you might want to look at what your hormone levels are and what your all your things are looking like in your labs and really assess, is this to my benefit for my long-term health, for my not just my joints and my heart health, but genetically, is this what I'm designed to do? For personally, I used to run long distance in high school and middle school, and I learned through genetic testing that I'm actually a sprinter. So obviously that's not the best thing for me, for example. So yes, list heavy things, find things that you love to do. So, when I was a kid, I would just go for a bike ride all day. I didn't say, well, I'm going to go exercise and work out. And then it becomes another thing on our to-do list. So get away from the to-do list, make it fun, make it something you enjoy. It's not a chore. And the other thing is having accountability partner, mm-hmm. or buddy, a friend, coworker, whether it's just a walk at lunchtime or yoga or, a bike ride, hike, et cetera, that you're going to keep each other accountable and not slip. So, and the same thing with meals. So whether you're roommates or significant other or wife or friend, and, maybe you guys can make meals together and it doesn't become this big chore. I think a lot of the issues in our culture is we're trying to do everything by ourselves, where if you can make food more about community again, then it becomes fun. It's not so much about, oh my God, I have to do meal planning every Sunday or Saturday for the week. How the heck am I going to fit this in? And then you're setting ourselves up for failure there. So yeah, that does play into genetics. And I think a lot of people are suffering from loneliness, and men especially are thinking that we have to do it all alone and be so strong and like carry all this burden on our shoulders and, reach for the sky for success and all these kind of like shoulds and shoulding all over ourselves, where if you kind of make these things part of your community, part of your things that you enjoy and make them fun versus kind of like, well, I just want to, do what I want to do and not really care about this stuff. Our health, I mean, I'm kind of getting on my soapbox again, but our health affects our whole community, affects our family. So when we are being unhealthy and stuck in our addictions, whether it's food, alcohol, tobacco, whatever, it is affecting our family, our friends, our coworkers, and it is causing serious harm. So you may not be thinking about this now, but maybe it takes some guys like a first or second heart attack to kind of wake up, if they wake up at all. So hopefully you can take all this and go get some genetic testing, and we hope that this has been helpful for everybody. I'm gonna share with everybody where you can find Dr. Rika. So if you're on Twitter, which Twitter is still pretty popular, DRRAJKA. So that's her Twitter handle, at DRRAJK, Dr. Rika. And then Instagram, it's the same handle, DRRAJK, Dr. Rika. Also, she's going to be coming out with a book, so stay tuned for that. She'll probably be announcing it on social media. And you can find her on her website at www.drrajk.com, Dr. Rika. So this has been very informative, very insightful. Thanks for your time. Thanks for sharing with everybody. And I'm looking forward to reading your book when it comes out and staying in touch about your new developments.
Oh, thanks so much, Dr. Madeira. I'm hoping that your listeners will take away one nugget and they can apply it to their lives. And we may never know. I hear, as you do too, years down the road, it could be a year down the road. I did that one thing you suggested. One of those things you suggested in my life has been so different. And that would, I think that brings us all a lot of joy in the field. And so, and just so that people know that there are other ways out there, and there's a smart way to do hormone replacement. And then there's a way that can be quite dangerous. So just to educate and inform. So thanks again for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for being on. I'm grateful for you sharing your time. I know you're busy with family and work and all those things. So everybody, share the podcast with your friends and family, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and other things you want to hear from us. Okay, have a wonderful day or evening, wherever you are.
Now here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts. Thank you.